Good morning. Welcome to Husky Nation News, right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I'm your host, Sarah Larshani, and here are the news of the University of Connecticut from this week. Stephen Hillenburg, the creator of the hit Nickelodeon show SpongeBob, passed away this week after a long battle with ALS. He was 57 years old. UCTV host Luke Hodges reported the story. Hillenburg announced his diagnosis back in March of this year, but promised to continue to work on the show for as long as he was able. Hodges reports that the hit show was first aired in 1999 and has been aired in 200 countries and translated into more than 50 languages. Protesters blocked the highways in Hoover, Alabama, in protest of police brutality after police shot and killed a black man who was seen with a gun after a shooting in a mall on Thanksgiving. UCTV host Lindsay Kane reported the story. The actual gunman was still at large until this morning when police said they have a suspect in custody. Police mistook Emantic E.J. Bradford as the shooter. The gunman killed two shoppers, an 18-year-old and a 12-year-old. Thousands of migrants from Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador were fleeing violence in their home countries when they were met with tear gas at the U.S.-Mexico border this week. UCTV host Luke Hodges reported that President Donald Trump justified the use and claimed that tear gas was very safe. Trump states that no one will enter the country unless they do so legally. Those seeking asylum must wait at the Mexican side of the border until their cases are decided. In more local news, the Women's Center is still accepting donations for their winter warmth drive to benefit the Holy Family Shelter in Willimantic. Daily Campus correspondent Miranda Garcia reported that the shelter supports homeless women and children in the Willimantic area. The Women's Center is asking for new or used clothes, as well as sheets, blankets, pillows, and towels to be donated by December 7th. Calope Sanderson, co-chair of the Women's Center Programming Committee, says, "So it's a great way to give back this holiday season and give to those in need." Students can expect to see more fundraisers in the upcoming weeks for the holiday season. UConn PIRG hosted a charity showcase to raise funds for the Wyndham No Freeze Project for the hungry and homeless population this week. Daily Campus correspondent Joshua Oaklum reports Wyndham is the poorest county in the state, and this project aims to assist individuals without judgment. The showcase featured two guest speakers and UConn a cappella and dance groups. The event was part of PIRG's Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. Jamie S. Foster from the Rutt Center for Food Policy and Obesity says 40 million adults and 12 million children in the United States struggle with hunger insecurity. Students mourn transgender individuals who lost their lives due to identity-based violence this week at a candlelight memorial at the University of Connecticut's Rainbow Center. Daily Campus correspondent Panina Bede reports students who participated in the event, meant to mark Transgender Day of Remembrance, spoke of their own stories and experiences and honored those who were killed. The day is normally observed on November 20th, but was rescheduled due to Thanksgiving break. Junior Lucas Brunt says that trans visibility is important in reducing the number of victims. He says in order to do this, we need to make society more educated and help understand the issues without simply talking about death rates. That's all the news we have this week. We'll now be going into a short break before starting the talk portion of our show.
Hey you, yeah, you listening to this radio station, WHUS Stores. There's a chance you're a writer still awake at 2 a.m. trying to find the best way to write that sentence you're struggling with. Which, by the way, if you're trying to write that sentence, just say whatever you're trying to say out loud, and then write that. If you need more tips and tricks, or motivation to keep on writing, I suggest checking out the UConn Coalition of Writers, because hey, we know what you're going through. You can be a poet, songwriter, a playwright, a novelist, a comic book fan, whatever you are, you have a place in our community. Feel free to reach out at UConnCoalitionOfWriters@gmail.com to find out when we meet. Now I've got to get back to writing. You should too.
You're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7,
Yukon Sound Alternative.
University of Connecticut police arrested the White House correspondent from a conservative...
Fiestas de la Calle San Sebastian on Thursday.
My passion. Children are the future.
This budget sees UConn state funding cut by more than $300 million over the next...
High winds and heavy rain damaged a ventilation...
Undergraduate Student Government Student Services Committee released a petition after the...
Stories for students written by student journalists. Listen to Husky Nation News every Friday from 9:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. Read articles and view photography on WHUS.org. Become involved by contacting News Director at WHUS.org. Stay informed with the WHUS News Team on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.
And we're back. We'll now be moving into the talk portion of our news show. Please note, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or license of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. I'm here with the lovely Alexandra Ferris. I met Alexandra freshman year and got to know her better as she became extremely vocal about advocating awareness on human and sex trafficking. She started a chapter of A21, or Abolishing Slavery in the 21st Century, on the Hartford campus, and even organized a Walk for Freedom rally in West Hartford in 2016. More than 100 participants showed up to demonstrate. Hi, Alex. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
I'm good. I'm glad that you're here. So if you want to start off and just introduce yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a senior this year. I'm graduating this May, and I'm a political science major, and I am looking to go into international law, diplomacy, and just kind of see where that takes me.
All right. So I mentioned a little bit earlier that you've obviously started doing a lot of advocacy work and a lot of research on sex trafficking, and I think it's obviously an important topic. It's a heavy topic. So I'm just interested as to what got you started.
So I'm very independent. I like doing my own research. I like exploring ideas. And so when I was about 12 years old, actually, I don't know what sparked it. I think maybe I watched like an episode of SVU or something silly like that, had a conversation, and sex trafficking came up, and I'd never heard of it before. And so I just took the initiative and went on YouTube and Google and started researching it. And as a 12-year-old, I found some pretty pretty horrific things that I probably shouldn't have seen at that age, but it really left a mark on me, and it just hasn't left, and it's really lit a fire to continue advocacy work.
So sort of walk me through when you started the actual advocacy work, and I know you established A21 on the Hartford campus.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly a chapter of A21. It was more of an offshoot. We called it Students Working Against Assault and Trafficking, and we participated through their organization through fundraising, but it wasn't actually organized by A21. So,
I think that's important to clarify. Yeah. But the walk that you did, the Walk for Freedom, was meant to sort of advocate for the work that they were doing and stuff like that. So give me a little bit more background about that particular walk. What it stands for, why you do it, and just that larger context.
Yeah, for sure. So right now, it's estimated that between 25 and 40 million people globally are being trafficked every year. About 300,000 kids in the United States alone are being trafficked every year. And so in regards to human trafficking, people have this picture of what it is. They've like, oh, I've seen Taken. I know what trafficking, and that's not what it is. It can range from anything from forced labor with somebody who doesn't know the language very well to a boyfriend kind of forcing his girlfriend to do things to feed an addiction. You know, that's all sex trafficking or human trafficking. And so the walk was designed to bring awareness to people and shed light on what human trafficking actually is. It's not a distant concept. It's not something that happens in third world countries. This happens in Main Street in Hartford and in Manchester and West Hartford and ritzy communities. It's everywhere. And so getting people to realize that it happens in their backyard and they can do something about it, you know? And so the first step is awareness.
Why do you think when people talk about human or sex trafficking, they don't really see it as a local or a United States issue, but as a global issue? What stems that mentality?
So I have a few thoughts on this. I've recently done some independent research that I'm still working on. And when people think about sex trafficking, they can empathize with the victims of sex trafficking because they put themselves in the position of somebody who knows a victim, right? Because it's everywhere. So you think about it and you say, oh, that could be my sister or my niece or my mom or my dad that's being trafficked. But it's really uncomfortable for people to think about it in the reverse. And so it's a supply and demand. You know, if there's no demand, there can be no supply. And so that same kind of empathy that we use to empathize with victims, it's really uncomfortable for people to say, well, who is the demand? It's our fathers and our uncles and our priests and pastors, and not to defame any of those organizations or people, but that's who the demand is. And so it's easier to separate ourselves from it and say, well, you know, because my daughter isn't necessarily a Russian immigrant who, you know, who is vulnerable to that, then therefore the men in my life also can't be perpetrators, if that makes sense. So that's my personal view. That's not necessarily proven, but there is a big correlation of people not wanting to focus on the demand at all.
So you mentioned earlier that you're obviously getting extremely active.
Yeah.
With the sort of work, and you said you visited basically shelters and safe houses. Tell me a little bit more about the hands-on work that you do.
Okay, so for a little while, because, I mean, I'm a student, it's hard for me to commit to long-term things. And so for about 7 months, I was able to work with the local YWCA and be a sexual assault crisis counselor and advocate. And so that was the first hands-on work that I was really able to do, which is great because human trafficking usually happens after a previous abuse if it's sexual. And so working with girls and boys who have come out of abusive situations or need an advocate, I was able to do that and see the kind of prerequisite to people who can perpetuate the abuse and continue on in that cycle. And so that was the work that initially got me started in wanting to be more hands-on, less advocacy and more hands-on work, yeah.
Do you have any upcoming sort of efforts to assist victims?
Yeah, I do. So something about the sex trafficking world and human trafficking is it's everywhere, but there are isolated events where it spikes. And so the Super Bowl is actually the largest trafficking event annually in the United States. And I believe the world, I mean, the World Cup might, you know, exceed that. But right now it's the Super Bowl. And so people will fly in over 10,000 trafficking victims to be exploited for the week leading up to the Super Bowl and directly following. And so it's a huge event. It's just a hotbed for trafficking. And so I'll be going actually to the Super Bowl this year with 12 other nonprofits, and we're going to be doing some hands-on work. So that entails bringing resources to strip clubs or brothels or truck stops. Truck stops are really common for people to walk around and kind of sell themselves to earn money in that way. Hotels, the Super Bowl itself, airports. Atlanta, which is where the Super Bowl will be being held, is the largest trafficking airport because it's so big. People can fly in and fly out. It's hard to keep track of people. And so, yeah, that's what we'll be doing, and hopefully being able to work with local law enforcement. Last year, over 12 people were rescued through this kind of operation. And so while that doesn't sound like a lot, to me it sounds like a lot because less than 1% of victims are ever rescued from sex trafficking. And so to have 12 people rescued in one isolated event is a huge deal.
Why is that number so low of the number of people that get rescued from this sort of line of work? Or I don't even want to call it this line of work, but the situation.
It's an illegal industry. It's the fastest growing illegal industry in the world, second only to drug trafficking. And so, why is that number less than 1%, you said? So I think it goes back to the demand that we were talking about. Because less than, I believe it's also about 1% of traffickers are ever convicted. And so that number is pretty standard on both sides of the graph, if you will. But people are thinking that pimps and madams, and that's it. They think it's a few bad men in a dark room somewhere, and that's who's trafficking everyone. But that's not the case. It's the local person, and it's people in our lives. It's our relatives and people that we see every day. And so if we shift our mentality from a few bad men or a few bad women who are trafficking 25 million people globally, like that's an astronomical number, and that's not how it happens. An example, if I can use just an example, would be, so you have a mom who has a drug addiction that she can't feed anymore, but she has, you know, a young son and daughter, and she can't pay her light bill and she can't pay her mortgage, but she has a brother. And so perhaps her brother would come to her and say, so I'll pay your mortgage and your light bill, and I'm just going to spend the day, you know, quote unquote, with your kids. And she just, no questions asked, okay, because she needs to feed her drug addiction. She needs to pay her light bill. That's trafficking. And so anything that's an exchange for sex, or anything that's an exchange, if you're talking about forced labor for work with no pay or bonded labor, that's also trafficking. And so changing our mentality from who is trafficking and allowing ourselves to confront it, and then offering the necessary resources for those who are perpetrators. Not that there can't be convictions. I think they need to be in prison for a very long time. Not that there can't be punishments. I think it should be very heavy. But saying, we see you, we're removing your anonymity. So on that topic real quick, Thorn, which is an organization founded by Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore, they founded this organization that helps children who are in abusive situations and helps fight child sex trafficking. So they started a software where they interrupt the screen of someone who is viewing this kind of explicit material of children online. And what it does is they click on this message that interrupts their screen, and it brings them to a different computer screen, and it says, we see what you're doing and we want to help you. You know, they remove the anonymity. People will do things in darkness they would never do in front of other people. And they've had so much success with the software because they don't just shame them. They say, here are resources for you to fight this, to fight this behavior. And so I think that's incredible. I think we need to do more of that and not be afraid to confront the demand.
I'm going to sidetrack and sort of go back to the victims.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about sort of some of the characteristics that put somebody at a more vulnerable position to be a victim?
Absolutely. And so children in the foster care system are highly vulnerable. Within 48 hours of a child running away from home, they will be approached by someone with the intent to traffic them. And so foster kids who maybe have to bounce around from home to home or aren't in the best families, there are a lot of foster kids in great loving families, but the ones that aren't, they're very vulnerable. Children or people with any kind of disability, whether it be mental or physical, they are more vulnerable. People who have lived in homes with patterns of abuse are more vulnerable. And just everybody, not to be like, everybody's vulnerable. The average age of entry into trafficking is about 12 years old. And so if you're not monitoring what your kids are doing online, they become vulnerable because they're opening up themselves to this huge network where everybody has access to them. And so I would say people who don't understand the language very well, all of these people, these are signs of vulnerability. People in abusive relationships, you know, this type of person.
Let me backtrack a little bit. And we kind of talked about some of the things that allow for someone to become a victim.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you know this or if you've looked into this. What are the circumstances? And you mentioned sort of the mother that might need to feed an addiction.
Right.
But what other sort of characteristics or maybe even societal trends allow for there to be such a high demand for victimization, or not, I don't want to say victimization, such a high demand for someone to traffic another person?
Right.
And why does somebody get involved with that sort of behavior in the first place?
Focusing on the victims? Or
no, focusing on the traffickers.
Okay, so why is there such a societal demand for
that?
So, again, my personal opinion, our society has become so hyper-sexualized, and everything's about sex and sex sells. And so this is a little off topic, but it all feeds back into one. So again, with some independent research I've been doing, the amount of pornography consumption in the world is astronomical. Like over 5 billion hours, I believe, were viewed, something crazy like that, just last year on one site of pornography. And so what happens is, sure, you may have recreational pornography, but that's not going to feed your need for very long, because you're going to have to keep expanding and keep expanding, right? So if I have a really good food that I have that's only going to satiate my appetite for so long until I need something more and something bigger and better. So it's the same with sex. And so you have a healthy sexual relationship, and all of a sudden that's not satisfying your need, and you don't know how to have a healthy behavior with another human being. And so you start dabbling in pornography, and that's fine and innocent. And then all of a sudden that pornography takes a turn where maybe it becomes a little more violent, or it's depicting minors maybe. And you're like, oh, well, it's harmless because it's on a screen. And so you're separating yourself from a reality, but you're creating it, right? Chemically in your brain, you're connecting with that story. And so you go down this path where you continue to deviate and dabble in deviant sexual behaviors, and pretty soon you're going to have to act it out. And so basically that fantasy life is going to have to become a reality for you, or you're going to have to give up your fantasy life. Does that make sense? And so you have this world where people are consuming so much explicit sexual content out of the context of what most would deem a healthy sexual relationship, and they need more of it. And so then all of a sudden in your brain, a healthy sexual relationship looks like having sex with a minor, because that's what you've seen in pornography, and now that's what you like. And so now when you go to act that out, well, that's not legal. And so now you get into this world, and it's people are ashamed by this behavior of theirs because it's so chemical in them, because they fed it for so long, and it's so they need it. And so now, you know, you're part of trafficking, because now you can't control your desire to have sex with a minor, you know, with a 12-year-old, and you have to keep feeding it. So can I use an example real quick?
Sure.
I don't want it to be too, I'll keep it pretty minimalistic. But so a lot of times it doesn't even have to be sex. Sometimes it can be violent behavior. And so in some situations that I've been familiar with, not personally, but through people I've discussed who have been trafficked, the violence was actually what people needed to satiate their desires. It wasn't even sex anymore, because they had drifted so far from that normal sexual behavior, if you will. And so, yeah, I would say our society is so hypersexualized, and it's seen as a good thing, you know, for that kind of behavior. And so that's, again, a personal view, but I do believe it's contributed so much to sex trafficking, because it normalizes it. It normalizes deviant sexual behavior.
You mentioned pornography. Yeah. And so for anybody who's listening who doesn't know, I've been working on my own research for a mini documentary on sex trafficking within the state of Connecticut.
Okay.
And one of the issues that I have is that it's very hard to talk about sex trafficking without talking about a bunch of other topics.
Yes.
Whether it's sex work, whether it's legality, mm-hmm. whether it's immigration, there's a whole bunch of different caveats that come into talking about this one topic.
Yes.
From any angle that you want to put. So what are some of the other obstacles that come in when a victim is trying to sort of step out of this lifestyle?
Yeah.
That may not have to do particularly with the situation of being trafficked, mm-hmm. but every other aspect in terms of coming back to a normal life?
That's a really good question. So, like you said, there are so many other contributing factors. So if somebody is being trafficked by a family member who had previously abused them for years, so a big obstacle for them is going to be, well, I can't have a normal family life now, right? Because my family trafficked me. And so how do they develop the concept of family and a good support system and a good community? People develop coping mechanisms, whether it be eating heavily or whether it be smoking or whether it be in their room because they have so much anxiety. You know, they can't have these normal social skills. So I would say providing the help, and it sounds so simple, not victim blaming, and I'm careful to use that word because it's kind of become a catch-all in the sex world, if you will, and I don't like that because I think sex trafficking is so different. It's not just sexual assault, and victim blaming is a problem everywhere, but in sexual assault, a lot of people blame the victim because it's such a cycle, and it happens for so long. So like, well, why didn't you just leave? Well, you know, they can't just leave. And so I would say providing resources, psychologists, therapists, hospitals, people, art, you know, expressions, ways that they can redefine who they are, reclaim their identity for themselves. That's what I would say, because their identity is stripped from them, right? They become an object. They become a commodity. And so reinstating that identity into them, I think, is so important beyond just meeting their felt needs, like going to a hospital or talking to a shrink. You know,
one of the things that I've sort of been looking into and sort of trying to wrap my head around is the grooming process of taking someone who may be already vulnerable and sort of turning them into somebody that can be trafficked.
Yeah.
And so in your research, what have you found about the things that are sort of the mechanisms or the tools that people use to groom someone for this sort of lifestyle? Because you mentioned it's very hard to get out of.
It is. So there's one method, I believe it's called the Romeo method or something. And it often happens with a young girl who is in a family situation that she doesn't really like. It doesn't have to be abusive. She doesn't have to be from a foster home. But, you know, just a young girl trying to find her way. You know, she's 12 or 13. And so she meets maybe an older man. Maybe he's in his 30s. And all of a sudden he tells her, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, you're so funny. Why doesn't your family appreciate you? He buys her an expensive gift. And so this is the grooming process, and all of a sudden she begins to feel seen by somebody who she doesn't know is a predator, because he's away from the drama. He's not my family. You know, he gets me. Nobody gets me. And he might ask her to move out of state with him, and she'll say yes, you know, and she might not even tell her family. And she'll just be like, I met my boyfriend. They don't know he's 30. They don't know who he is. She doesn't know what he does. He's probably told her he has some job that he doesn't have, you know, and she trusts him. And she moves because she feels loved. You know, she feels seen for the first time, maybe. And so that's a common method. That, I would say, is the most passive method, if you will. A lot of times, if you're talking about immigration, there's where a girl or a man will come over with the promise of something. So the promise of a job, the promise of a green card, the promise of a visa. They don't really speak the language. And they have a family to take care of, or they have kids. And so they leave their family behind, and now they're isolated in a new country, working for somebody they don't know, and their employer, quote-unquote, will take their documents, so they can't leave, will say, I'm going to hold on to all of your earnings for safekeeping until, you know, you pay me back for this green card, which is so expensive, you know, or you pay me back for your stay. That's really common too, and then they just get trapped in the cycle and they can never leave because they don't speak the language. They don't know how to get out. They don't know that if they just walked up to the police station and said, hey, this person hasn't paid me in 3 years, like that person will go to jail, but they don't know that. So that's also common. Like we said with drug addiction, you know, that's also common too for feeding habits, or if a family member or a boyfriend or a girlfriend needs to kind of make that money, and they're just a bad person. They're just a person who's looking to exploit a vulnerable human being, you know? There are just bad people in the world, and that's something that I had to wrap my head around.
All right, so we can obviously talk about this in multifaceted for so long, but I'm going to ask you one last question before we're out of time. What can people listening, or sort of everyday individuals, how can they sort of be mindful of this? And is there anything that they can do to sort of either spot it, or maybe like how do they get involved?
Absolutely. So I think if college students in particular would put our phones down and look up in the world around us and say, hey, that person looks lost. That person looks like they're scared. That person looks anxious. And go up to them and say, are you okay? Like, don't be afraid to put yourself out there to help another human being. That's one. And two, I would say if you're a parent, monitor what your kids do online. Like, don't be a helicopter parent. But, like, if they're chatting, they have so many chat rooms available to them. Ask, who are you talking to online? You know, has anybody been reaching out to you lately? And don't be afraid to be that person. Same thing if you have, like, little nieces or nephews. Just be very aware and don't be afraid to put yourself out there.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to all of you for listening to our show. Thank you to The Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. And thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Sarah Lershani, and you're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have a great weekend.